But of course, as we head into Easter weekend, there will be commemorations this weekend, of course, for the 1916 Rising, as there is every year. And believe it or not, we're 10 years on from the state commemoration for Roger Casement, which was held in Bannistrand on the 21st of April 2016. It was the only major 1916 centenary state event held outside Dublin, and kind of underlines the place in which Roger Casement has in Irish history, in Irish Republican history, in the national story, and the story of the Rising, a man celebrated in story and song ever since those fateful days of well over 100 years ago. With me on the programme to talk a bit more about this now is a man who's got a new book out about Roger Casement, and that is Rebel and Traitor, Rory O'Carroll, Guardian correspondent for Ireland with the Guardian newspaper. Rory, good morning to you, and thanks for joining me on the programme.
Good morning, thanks for having me.
Is that part of the reason why you wrote this story, that the place in which Roger Casement holds, I suppose, both in Irish and British history? He was a fairly consequential figure, a fascinating figure, really, in both.
Yes, I mean, his backstory, even before we get to the 1916, you know, he can make films about his life up until then you know, his exploits in Africa, working as a foreign office consular official for the British government, exposing atrocities against indigenous tribes in the Congo, and then doing it again in the Amazon, exposing atrocities in Peru, for which he was knighted. I mean, that was why he became a knight of the realm. He was Sir Roger, and why he was so feted even by English society before the war. I mean, he was considered, you know, an embodiment of nobility. And this is all, you know, right before, you know, what makes then the pivot to, you know, to the Irish nationalism and the whole 1916 story so extraordinary.
Yeah, but at the same time, you delve into his personal life and the sort of person he was. And I know you do a lot of work in this book, and it's part of what makes it so fascinating. The stories of the people around him involved in the investigation, the people on either sides, the Americans, the Germans, the British. But you said that he's a nomad with no partner, no children, stranded somewhere between Protestant and Catholic, British and Irish, serving yet scorning the crown. It was a fractured identity. That's the kind of person he was, or the situation he found himself in.
Yes, and I mean, the book, in my book, like A Rebel and a Traitor, captures that duality of him, because he was a rebel, obviously, but also he was a traitor from the British perspective. And I mean, Roger Casement himself acknowledged that he was committing treason in his efforts in Germany to get weapons for the Rising, and to try to raise an Irish brigade among Irish prisoners of war there in German camps. And so, I mean, he was both of these things. And I mean, the story that because I, you know, like all, you know, Irish school children growing up, I was quite familiar with the outlines of the story. But what prompted me to do the book was I stumbled across this part that was very unfamiliar to me, which was that Casement was hunted by the British for 18 months, the last 18 months of his life, like during the war. And in a sense, they knew he was coming because they had code breakers, they had spies. And it's an extraordinary, you know, tale. And, you know, there was, especially when it gets to Kerry, I mean, there's so many, you know, kind of twists and turns in the story, and things I'd not realized before until doing the research, like just how so close they, you know, the rebels came for to everything working the way they intended it to. And for example, that's only when I was speaking or, you know, diving into the archives of the Germans, for example. I mean, the German, there was the U-boat captain who brought Casement in the submarine. But then also there was this other German naval lieutenant who skippered the arms shipment that came into Trilly Bay. And it was amazing that the Germans actually pulled it off. I mean, they, you know, despite a Royal Navy blockade around the British Isles and the fact that the Royal Navy controlled the seas, the Germans actually managed to deliver the weapons on time, and Casement himself pretty much on time, and both vessels rendezvoused in Trilly Bay. And, I mean, that part of the story, and it's only one element to the wider story, was so compelling to me, and the fact that they came so close to everything working, and then, as we know, it fell apart.
Yeah, it unraveled. The car went off a pier. The people were meant to meet him. He was on his own, and all that happened after that. But there's another side of it as well, and this goes to the characters involved here, the remarkable people, and particularly, I suppose, the British side. This is the issue of Sir William Reginald Hall, who was one of those who was hunting Casement.
Yes, and he is the antagonist in the story. It's a game of cat and mouse, really, and the cat is Reginald Blinker Hall. He was a former battleship captain who then became the head of Admiralty Intelligence. So he's in Whitehall at the apex of this vast kind of spy network of the Admiralty Intelligence. They had, as I mentioned earlier, code breakers who were eavesdropping on German communications, and they had surveillance installations all over Britain and Ireland. And he, early in the war, learns what Casement is up to. And, I mean, Reginald Hall is like, he's an extraordinary character himself. I mean, he's ruthless. He's a bit eccentric at times. He's brilliant. And he's also mischievous. And he's also has it in for Casement. He feels that Casement has to be caught, and not just caught, then he has to die. And so it's this kind of a lethal pursuit by Reginald Hall with Casement in the crosshairs.
Yeah, and there was that moment as well, which I didn't know. Reginald Hall, Blinker Hall as his nickname was, they knew about the Rising, and he effectively let it happen. Could have intervened and said, no, you know, we're better off letting this happen and letting the consequence happen and finding out who's involved and all of that. That's a pretty remarkable decision, wasn't it?
It is. It's one of the great what-ifs, and there's so many what-ifs in around the story. But the fact that in Whitehall, he, through the intercepts of the German messages, yes, he knew the Rising was planned. I mean, they had a very good sense of what was of what the Irish Republican Brotherhood were up to. And yet he did not share that information fully with Dublin Castle, with the, you know, the British authorities were running Ireland. And, you know, there's evidence that Reginald Hall is a political meddler. And, you know, he was fed up with the fact that even prior to the Rising, Irish separatists and Irish volunteers, militia, were kind of marching around openly, brandishing weapons, and that the British administration here had kind of held it back from cracking down on them. You know, it's kind of sensibly so, because they didn't want to kind of provoke a Rising. But he was fed up with this, and he felt, you know what, let this Rising happen. It's going to be a military fiasco. We can squash it, and then we'll have the justification to kind of extirpate these, you know, ruddy rascals and these Irish troublemakers once and for all. And so, in a sense, it was kind of like social engineering into Irish history.
Yeah. Yeah. And
it seems
they went on. Yeah, sorry.
Seems like he keeps talking about twists, but it's true that he initially, it looks like Reginald Hall has pulled it off, because it seems to be working. I mean, they, spoiler alert, but they capture Casement.
Yeah.
The Rising is crushed, and yet then, as we all know, that, you know, a terrible beauty is born, because, you know, then the worm turns. And, you know, this then becomes, the launch pad for Irish independence.
Yeah, the whole blood sacrifice happens. The PR disaster of executing the leaders, which totally turns public sentiment, the effect of World War One, all of those things conspire and come in and turn things totally around on the British. All of that stemming from, you could argue, Blinker Hall's decision to let this go ahead.
Yes, I mean, and that's why he's such a wonderful character in the book, because he brings in the whole British perspective, which we don't always necessarily get in stories of 1916. You know, we're seeing how it looked to decision makers in London, and also, you know, his colleagues in Dublin Castle. And also, I would add to that, the RIC, some of the RIC men are characters in this book in Kerry, and, you know, their roles, kind of cameos, crucial cameos in terms of, you know, capturing encasement and then delivering him to the British. But for Blinker Hall, I mean, the motif of the book is it's a manhunt. And the hunt did not end once Casement was captured in Kerry. And once then he's, you know, then marched onto the train at Tralee and then brought to Dublin. And even after he's sentenced to death in London, for Reginald Hall, the hunt still continues, because there was a possibility or a risk, as Hall would have seen it, that the death sentence was going to be commuted. And so he needed to continue, and the hunt then took on a new form, which was that to kind of kill. And here I may be kind of, you know, I guess spoiling the plot, but, you know, he had to kill the clemency campaign. And the way he did this was by leaking Casement's private diaries.
Yeah. Yeah, and that was part of destroying his public reputation alongside the other side, and the other side ensuring that he was put to death. A revealing thing about this as well, Rory, and did you find this when I know you did a lot of research, you talked to some of the protagonist's descendants, you looked through documentation with the Germany and all of those things. The British Empire at the time, we look back and we think of it as, you know, it was over 100 years ago, it was, you know, fairly rudimentary, but at the same time, when you're maintaining an empire, it's a system of control, isn't it? And there's a whole system of informers, policemen, detectives, RIC men, an entire network of espionage and spying, that an architecture that has to maintain that control in occupied countries.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this was up until the world had seen. And, you know, Ireland had been the first kind of colony of that empire. And yeah. So we were kind of the... And by then, of course, we would have been, you know, the attempt had been to fold us or Ireland within, you know, the United Kingdom, not just the empire. And yet they had this, you know, the RIC, I mean, one historian, you know, said, I mean, the RIC were so well connected into local communities that if a cow farted, they knew, which perhaps a slight exaggeration, but, you know, this was, you know, a sense that they were the eyes and ears, the RIC were the eyes and ears of Dublin Castle, you know, outside of Dublin in rural areas. And yeah. I was really struck in doing the research at just how, you know, how true that was. For example, around Ardfert, you know, Casement and his two comrades, they land, you know, at about 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, on this, you know, isolated remote beach. And yet, you know, and yet within a few hours, you know, the RIC know about it. And they're on their trail. They're then hunting, you know, these mysterious strangers. I mean, that in a sense was kind of impressive control for, yeah. You know, for the British Empire. Even if it's, and there's two RIC, in a sense, they were, you know, the embodiments of British authority. Even though they were actually, you know, Irishmen doing their job, and, you know, doing their duty as they saw it.
Yeah. All the more remarkable that, like, even with that level of control, the tighter the control happened, it all slipped through the fingers. And within 10 years, Ireland was a republic, which is kind of incredible. Rory, it's fascinating stuff. It really is amazing. It tells that side of the story as well, I suppose, Rory, about the history of it, about how he died as well. And I know, you know, I hadn't been aware that he actually tried to kill himself in prison. Was he rubbing poison onto himself to try and cheat the hangman?
Yes, before leaving on that submarine from Germany, the Germans offered him some poison in a vial or a capsule in case he wanted, you know, in case he was captured, should he choose to try to commit suicide. And so once he was captured and then he's taken to London, we think he actually was like, but he of course he had been searched, and yet we think they actually hid it in his hair. He had very thick, lustrous hair. I mean, he's famously handsome, but he also had this great, great head of hair. Anyway, he in the Tower of London, he was so distraught because by then, you know, the Rising, he'd heard news that the Rising had been crushed. He was facing a trial which he was dreading, and so he just, you know, and he felt so abandoned by everybody. And that he tried to commit suicide. And I mean, as I put in the book, I kind of thought, for me, one of the conjunctions in that the same night that he is trying to commit suicide with German poison, unsuccessfully, but he tries, that same night, the German army on the Western Front launched a gas attack against British army lines, which happened to be filled with Irish soldiers, especially Leinstermen and Dublin Fusiliers, in which hundreds of Irish men died in a German poison gas attack. And for me, I just kind of make that segue in the book to kind of show that, you know, there's nothing really black and white here.
Yeah.
You know, if Casement, you know, okay, he was allied with the Germans, whilst the Germans were also quite busy, you know, killing, you know, Irishmen. In a war. And, you know, in fact, the poison, German poison was in both cases, in Casement's case and in the trenches were both being used. And I included that just to show that it's complex. You know, it's not a straightforward case of black and white or the goodies and baddies. It's, you know, by Casement allying with the Germans, that raises, you know, tricky questions about, morality and also his own kind of political. So it's, and for me, that nuance is so important, you know, to get there, and that we can appreciate the different perspectives, and like, including, for example, from the RIC. I mean, you know, it's often people, you know, they're somehow seen as villains of the piece. And yet, I mean, these were just ordinary men doing their job. And at that time, and also the farmers and the locals who, in a sense, tipped off the RIC about Casement's whereabouts. Okay, they did not know who Casement was at that time. But you know, none of them were looking for independence at that time. I mean, hardly anybody in Ireland, outside of the ranks of a few hardcore radical political radicals, wanted independence. And so, you know, you need to factor that in as well into, like, why people did what they did.
Yeah, it's all part of a fascinating story. Rory, thanks a million for talking to us this morning. Good luck with it. It's a great read. A Rebel and a Traitor. That's Rory Carroll there, who is the best-selling author of Killing Thatcher as well, about the IRA almost killing Margaret Thatcher. Thanks for talking to us this morning. Rory Carroll there, A Rebel and a Traitor. And thanks for giving us your views.